Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Well, Tommy Joe Lucia here with episode 18 of No Spin Rodeo. I have Miss Kendra Santos and, of course, Greg Teagarden. Have you stopped spinning yet from Vegas?
No, I'm still recovering.
What about you, Kendra?
Well, it's glorious that we have rain. So we'll be greening up here in California pretty soon. That's amazing because we had a great grass. After a lot of years of drought, we had a great grass year last year. We're getting a bunch of rain right now, which is so welcomed. And I'm happy to be back to, well, there's four generations of us that are going to be gathering for Christmas, but three generations of us live right here. And I'm happy to be back to see my grandbaby Charlie and my dad, Papa Frank. And that's pretty cool, you know, to every single day to get to see your dad, your grandbaby, your son, your, you know, daughter-in-law. It's Taylor's coming home from Texas on Friday. It's awesome.
You can't take that for granted because when you raise them, they can leave. And some people are a long, long ways away from their boy or their son or their daughter and those grandbabies. And I feel sorry for those people that don't have that access because it's hard.
And some people don't even ever get the blessing of having them at all. So I don't take any of it for granted. And having two 85-year-old parents is a pretty amazing time in life. So
yeah, our trucks just came in from Vegas and we unloaded them. And then I got home and I'm still in Pacific time and in Texas. So I don't know if this does it to you, Greg, but I'm normally in bed at 8:30 and now it's 11:30. I'm in bed and waking up way after the roosters until I get reacclimated.
I tried to stay, like I was up at 4 in the morning every morning. So when I got back here, I'm still on East Coast time. So it worked out really good for me.
I try to do that, but the Vegas nights make you stay up later. I mean, like even if you want to go to bed early, sometimes you don't get that luxury. So
that is true.
That's true. All right. Well, Kendra, shall we? Last time we talked, gold buckles were not handed out. And I will say that the drama and the intensity of a final round competition with averages and aggregates and all of that stuff led to some pretty interesting stuff on Saturday night there in the Thomas and Mack.
Absolutely. Not disappointing whatsoever. It never is, really. I thought, you know, Keenan Hayes, which I know he had a record regular season, but, you know, he just became the first rookie world champion bareback rider we've ever seen. And it felt all week long, in a way, to me, it felt like he was sort of quiet. But it's just because of lack of victory laps. But then I look back, looking at my round by round thing, you know, that doesn't have round 10 on it yet, but it's like, you know, it's like, as they say, he plays the long. And so he played the long game and, so good for him. Cause it was feeling to me by about round 7 or 8, it's like, gosh, we haven't heard that much from Keenan Hayes, but he wasn't taking victory last, but he was hanging tough and doing what he could every round. So, you know, good for him. Every time you have a first, I mean, so he set a couple records this year, which, you know, he set a record last year as the most money ever won on a PRCA permit. And this year, regular season earnings and first rookie world champion bareback rider of all time. That's a pretty noisy stat. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Now, I'm a Jess Pope fan, and there was a while there that I was thinking, okay, Jess, right? you're going to do this again. And, but you know what? I will again say I think that was the best field of bareback riders as a whole that I can remember in a long, long time. I mean, there is a lot of way more. I mean, heck, I think there's 73 bareback riders total or something. Maybe there's 100 now, right? It was down to like 55 or 60. Literally, that's all there were. And now we saw 15 bareback riders that were all could win at any given day on the right horse.
Absolutely. And like the one show we did on Rodeo Deep Dive was Rookie Revolution. And I mean, that's for real. Like, and by the way, I don't think I actually mentioned that Keenan won the average, but you know, Keenan and Kate Sonier and Dean Thompson and those guys, to be on your rookie card and at the NFR for so much of that. I mean, this is kind of a revolution. And, I don't know if changing of the guard is the way to say it, but you know, and by the way, how many times had Jez Pope won the average? Like he ended up second this year behind Keenan, but these kids are, you know, they're coming and it is great. None of us wants to see any event die out, you know, or go extinct. And so the head count on bareback riders, we know throughout the year, there are plenty of rodeos. I mean, there are some PRCA rodeos that literally do not get a bareback rider because there aren't enough to go around. So it's nice to see, you know, a rebuilding. And I don't know if you saw it, but I did see a photograph that Jayco Roper put out there of his hand, his riding hand toward the end of the week, like, you know, three times its normal thickness or whatever. I mean, you can tell from across the room which hand a guy rides with. That event is brutal.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. You're going to see guys in bareback riding. You notice it more. But, you know, it's harder on Tim O'Connell, right? Because he's got more nods, more miles on him. And, you know, and as these guys get a little older and you got these guys who are really, really young and their body hasn't been through the ringer, that 8-second ringer, and the bareback riding is by far the most physically demanding event without exception. I mean, you know, I remember what Casey and I were talking about and his whole arm on that side, it looks like if you look to the right, he looks like a gorilla. On the left, he looks like a capuchin. Like it's, that whole side is built up, and the swelling in those guys' hands by about 7 or 8. And those of you who aren't rodeo aficionados, bareback riding is tough on the body. So I think it is natural to see these young guys when they learn the craft, right? They learn how to do it. Then you see interesting things like, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Rocker does because he still hasn't mastered every type of horse, and that was obvious, right? When he's on a horse that fits him really good, I think he's almost impossible to beat, frankly. But remember, I said, "Oh, Rocker's got this." Well, you know, some of those horses, not to belabor bareback riding, but some of those horses were a struggle for Rocker because of his size and their size. So, you know, we'll see what he does next year.
Yep. Shall we talk about the steer wrestling?
Well, when you start it, I want to start by admitting a mistake, okay? Which is very hard for me to do. So do you remember I threw a fit about the flag on Wags, Wagasback, you know, when they didn't flag him? And so I made some calls to kind of verify, and I never got a chance to bring it up, but I want to say I stand corrected. So in talking with Jimmy Adams and here's the thing about some of the PRCA rules. The rule is the steer has to be laying flat. Okay. But the definition of that for the judges, which I don't think is written, it may be, but I couldn't find it, is all 4 feet pointing out. So if you remember that leg wasn't under the steer. Remember, everybody saw that shot. It wasn't under, but it was still cocked, right? It wasn't straight. And evidently, which I can understand, when that leg goes out, that hip rolls down, that outside hip, and that's considered flat. So while I said Wags got screwed, the truth is the flag was correct And that's the way they flagged all of those with their feet out. And Wags almost got in trouble another time or two with the same thing, that foot not being, all 4 feet have to be pointing in the same direction away from the steer's back. So I want to say I was wrong. That was right.
I feel like, you know, after that, he did sort of overcompensate to make sure that he had the run absolutely finished. I'm sure he was doing that a little bit, you know, as a point. But I'll say this, you know, I sit next to someone who watches Wags every run in slow motion about 500 times. Oates' opinion, you know, again, it's super easy to, you know, these guys have to do it in real time. So this is zero bashing on a judge. Oates' opinion was that he shouldn't, he thought maybe again, this was not black and white. Absolutely not black and white. But he thought he shouldn't have had to get him back up and throw him back down all the way. But he agreed that at that moment, there was that moment that everybody posted the picture and stuff. Well, that's not, he shouldn't have gotten a flag then. But he thought the steer actually did come clean before he had to get him all the way up. But, you know, this stuff happens in fraction of an eye. So no, zero bashing. So I don't even
know. Well, no, and I'm not bashing, but if the rule is that all of their legs have to be sticking out, right? Like sticking, yeah, stretched out. Wags's, that inside leg wasn't, if that's their definition, if the judge's definition of laying flat is all 4 legs sticking out, I could see the hawk, because I said to Jimmy, his hawk, I saw his whole, his hawk was not under his body. And Jimmy just said, well, technically that leg's supposed to be extended out to get the flag. That is considered, or that's the way they were trained to flag. So based on that, it was pretty clear that leg wasn't sticking out. Now, had Wags stayed on the ground or twisted a little harder, right? Or, you know what I mean? Just a little bit, it probably would have rolled that hip over and that leg would have came out. Well, he just didn't realize he missed it.
Right. And kind of like in hindsight, I'm sure JD Struxness in somewhat of a similar situation. In hindsight, yeah, when he's doing so well in the average, he would have stayed hooked, stayed down, and make sure he finished it and looked up. Did I get a flag before he turned loose or whatever? Yeah. Don Payne was at his first NFR and he won the average, and that he was super impressive. He rode Trevor Nelson's horse, Dr. Pepper, and was so consistent. His brother Grady hazed. That was cool. It was really noticeable. Will Loomis has really been such a contender the last few years, you know, for world championship and been so close. And it seems like right at the end, he's always been there. He kind of had, you know, I'm sure by his standards, a disappointing, you know, finals. It was cool. He's flipped the last round with Wags back. And when Oat and I were at Wags' wedding, we sat with Will and his wife Jenna, and him and Wags back to split that last round. That was cool. They're very, very, very good friends. I would love to make a comment that I probably shouldn't even bother with, but there was a lot of I haven't seen it on social media because I've been sort of absent the last few days, you know, trying to catch a breath. And really during the finals, I wasn't on there much except to post something occasionally. But there was a lot of chatter about, oh, what happened with Wagasback and Dalton Massey, you know, at the last one, whatever. You know, here's what, you know, the basics is Dalton apparently had to be some sort of short 4, I think, to win the world. And he was 3-3 and he broke out. And, you know, that's heartbreaking for him. What a year he had, this record, you know, year. And then apparently on TV, which I was not watching it on TV, but apparently, you know, Wagasback's 3-8 and he goes before Dalton and then he goes back there. And, I mean, he's pumped. And so apparently people were trying to read lips and people were trying to read body language and whatever. And people tried to brew up some sort of a controversy, I'm told. Like, you know, they had a beef with each other and they, you know, they were, and I asked, and I believe that to not be true. And I'm sort of, you know, people were even trying to say that you know, I always stand up for the Bulldoggers. I think most people speak so highly of most Bulldoggers, but I was pretty disappointed for somebody to say, for starters, I'll say that my seatmate, Oat, when Wagesback made that run in the 10th round, like, Oat was kind of famous for, he won, I think, 7 10th rounds in his career. Like, he, when the heat was really turned up, like, he really dug that pressure or whatever. And Wagesback's the same way. So, to me, like, Oat stood up and he gave a personal standing ovation to Wagesback. And then people were like, oh, did he say something, you know, derogatory to Oat? Because now Wagesback has 5 and all. Suck it out and all this stuff. And it's like, come on. I mean, you know, like Wagesback, where Oat has just sat down. He walked to the bottom to, you know, wave at him over the rail and everything. He was so happy. And then people are starting that. Wagesback moments later calls Oat, like, come downstairs. I want you in the pictures, whatever. Like, Oat loves those kids, you know, he really does. And it's like, that would be like saying that when Oat passed Roy Duval for gold buckles, that Roy Duval was pissed. It's like, no, Roy Duval was happy for Oat. That's how real bulldoggers roll. So I was just kind of like, you know, have those guys ever been frustrated with each other? Absolutely. Does Wagesback wear a purple shirt in the 10th round to get Oat's goat? Absolutely. Is Cash Rob wear a purple shirt to get Oat's goat because now he runs with Wagesback? Absolutely. But it's all in good fun. And it's only because, you know, everybody knows by now, whenever Oat tried to wear purple, he got his shirt torn off. And so they do that. And now Wagesback and Cash Rob are saying they are going to have a purple shirt for Oat to wear in the 10th round next year in solidarity. And he might do it. I mean, if they ask him to do it, but he loves them. Like when I first came onto the scene, you know, really hanging out with Oat a lot, he was cooking Wagesback pancakes in his kitchen. You know, that's, he loves these kids. And so for people, I think to try to stir some kind of weird pot, like Wagesback, it's not a crime to be pumped up that you were just 3-8 in the 10th round. We didn't know. And by the way, if Dalton doesn't break the barrier, he wins the world. And everybody knew that, including Wagesback. So it's like, come on, let's not be bitches.
Well, it irritates me. Here's a little bit of what irritates me in the cowboy way thing. Okay. What is wrong with Wagesback wanting to win that buckle? He worked his butt off all year long. Does he have to pretend or even legitimately want somebody to beat him? That's bullshit crap.
Well,
I would want to win too, right? You want to win. That's okay. I know it. Well, the cowboy way is to root for everybody to beat you. Whatever. Okay, fine. Root for somebody to beat you. But no, God, when you put that much work into it, he wanted to win. And of course, I'm sure, because, you know, you see the guys, here's the deal. You see all these guys, someone just beats them and they're clapping and they're rooting for them. Okay, congratulations, but it's okay for down deep in them to be going, damn it.
The cowboy way.
I wanted that.
Yeah, the cowboy way is everybody have a fair shot, may the best man win. That's the cowboy way. And by the way, like an illustration that comes to mind, when they brought Oat back, been retired for decades, to be the legend at the American, and he missed the final four by a tenth of a second. And my friend Leah Garcia runs up, like everybody's cheering. All the young bulldoggers are just swarming him. They're so happy. I can see on the big screen, Oat was pissed off. He was so pissed that he did not make that final four. And they were all expecting it to be like, oh, well, you know, good job. You didn't fall off. And he was like, F that. Like, you know, that's how they really feel. So yes, you shouldn't have to apologize for being successful. And it'd be different if something happened and like, you know, Dalton Massey got fouled in the last round or something. Dalton Massey told Wagesback, good job. Good for Dalton Massey. And Dalton Massey, I mean, what a show he put on this year. It's not like he's a freaking loser. He had an amazing year. So for anyone to bother focusing or trying to stir the pot, used to get so frustrated with Wagesback. Why? Because they had 55 steers at Bill Duval's arena. And Wagesback, that Rowdy Parrot was there too. He would not stop. And it'd be like, He just wanted to bring him back up. And while that's how O was when he was that age, when he was a kid out with there with Bill and Roy. But, you know, his frustration was, you're killing me. But what I see when I look at Tyler Wagus back, you know, some people are like, oh, he's cocky or whatever. Well, confidence is everything. And just because he was born with a, you know, extra confidence in his vein, more power to him. But what I see is like the stories of like Mike Wagusback, his dad, you know, Tom Carney, those guys who actually trained him to be a steer wrestler when he's a kid, they tell of like when he's in junior high, he doesn't win jack and he's out there and he didn't win and he was slower than everybody else. Why? Because his dad was insisting that he did it correctly. And that was slower than the kids who would fall on their back and try to hook the nose. But let's talk about where that took him. They made him do it correctly when he was in, you know, seventh and eighth grade, and he wouldn't win and he'd get so frustrated. And that, you know, that little confident little kid would cry because he didn't win. But the long game, you know, where are those kids that fell on their back that were too flat, you know, in Gallup, New Mexico at the junior high finals? You know, his daddy was playing the long game, and it's looking to me like it's worked out pretty well. So again, to you, to quote my friend Ty Murray, Toots, jealousy is a very ugly emotion. And I hope people that are trying to stir the pot based on jealousy will stick a cork in it for Christmas.
I agree. That I was going to say jealousy. If you lose, I'm not going to call you a loser, but if you don't win, a lot of times arrogance is usually being cast on someone from someone who couldn't beat them. And there's nothing wrong with being proud and confident. And some people confuse that with arrogance, right? Now, I've seen arrogant jerks, arrogant people, but here's an arrogant person for me. That's the person that's arrogant and doesn't have any reason to be. That's the one that bugs me. The one that thinks that they ought to be and haven't been. Right. But when you do what you do and you're damn good at it, you deserve it. So enough of that. I agree with you. If you win, you should be happy about winning and you shouldn't pretend that you want somebody to beat you. Sorry.
Well, you did. Being happy for your own success is great. And also shout out to Remy Parrott, who did a phenomenal, you know what pressure it would, phenomenal job hazing for both Jacob Talley and Wagusback. You know what pressure it is on you to haze for a Tyler Wagusback? That when everybody expects him to win the gold buckle, like miss one haze, you know, whatever. And that was so cool. And those people are like, they are family friends, but those people are family to each other. And to see that, you know, Remy Bulldogs, but if he weighs 130 pounds, I'm almost surprised. But the scene of those people all getting together down in that press room where everybody gets together after it's over was, you know, super cool. I mean, Remy jumped on when Tyler was taking his world championship portrait with his saddle. You know, it's a serious occasion, and Remy goes over there and jumps on the saddle. You know, it was just it's fun. It was fun. So that's cool. Anyway, yeah,
that's cool.
You want a team rope?
Yeah.
So.
No, I don't want a team rope, but I'll talk about it.
So, I mean, heartwarming. The only team to go 10 for 10 is Begay and Todd. And, you know, Derek and Coulter, it's just like a dream story in every way. And the fact that, you know, Coulter was a young NFR header, and then he goes home for 15 years to raise his family, like pulls up and his shoot, you know, he had the world at his feet rodeo wise, but he said no and went home and raised his kids. And then his kids, when it gets to be they get to be teenagers old enough to actually hold down the fort, and they're like, Dad, go do it. And the fact that they were the only team that went 10 for 10, they won the average. That was just so cool, you know? And so best friends, yep. We did pull Pucker when was it the ninth round that the Begay put like a Christmas wrap on that steer's horns, whatever it was. Late
yeah,
in
when
game,
he threw the egg nest on the top.
Oh Lord, have mercy! But you know that to
it
see
was
him
cowboy crap.
Absolutely. That's out on the desert, out in the desert. How many times has he had to do something like that when like his day's work depended on it? And by the way, there's Coulter, Casey was out of the TV camera range, you know, pushing the steer to go a certain way while, you know, it's like synchronized swimming with those horses and that steer. And I mean, that whole deal, that was, I mean, it was so cool. That was amazing. And so, and you know, Tyler Wade winning his first world title, Wesley Thorpe winning his second. Tyler Wade was saying, I never thought I'd make the NFR once, much less. You're going to have to talk a second.
Oh, that's the Vegas in you. Yeah, you have to, that's the smoke that you breathe over and over again for 18 rounds. So the only thing I'm going to say about the team roping is I think, and you're not going to convince me otherwise, I think the crossfire rule is completely BS, and I'll tell you why. Because I continually ask about the crossfire, and nobody can give me a clear answer about the – including team ropers – about crossfire. So there's no clear definition for it. That's the first thing. That's kind of like some of the other entities in the business. Yeah, Greg.
Do you want to do a little quick primer on people who don't understand what crossfire is when it comes to the team roping?
Well, like what crossfire is supposed to be?
Yes. Like what is a crossfire?
So the header, correct me if I'm wrong, Kendra, after you're done coughing up a tapeworm or whatever's going on. The header has to rope the steer, and the steer's body has to switch directions. So when the header ropes the steer, there's two people in team roping, header and heeler. The header's on the left-hand side. He ropes the steer. He turns his horse immediately, or his horse turns usually, immediately left, turning that steer's body and hind leg around to that direction. And they're not allowed to rope those heels, Greg, before that hind end turns around in the current crossfire rule. Now, where that point is, when somebody does this in 3.3 seconds, hello, Coleman, you know, where that point is. And for me, if you ask team ropers, they say it's not quicker. It's not an advantage for most team ropers to rope early anyway. So why is there the rule? Somebody tell me why we have to do it?
Okay, so for one thing, Coleman and Logan Medlin, when they got flagged out, they were 3-1, right? That was going to be a whole new world record. 3-3 is existing. But anyway, my understanding that the history on it goes back to Ricky Green, the wild. He had this black horse named Cowboy, and Ricky used to, it's just wild. And he'd throw over Cowboy's neck. Anyway, this would be back in what, 70s and 80s. And it was just so, it just kind of wrecked everybody the crossfire rule goes back to, I mean, he wasn't afraid to throw when the steer's still running down the arena, and his percentage was lower, but it was wild. And another guy who could rope really wild like that, I remember, was Kenny Harrell, who'd throw over, oh, what was that horse's name, that little bay horse. But anyway, pull off some really wild shots. To me, on the crossfire, what I always say is I feel like if you have not been a world-class team roper, it happens so fast that it's just such a hard call to make, unless you're seeing it in slow motion because you've done it thousands of times yourself. So,
but at what point is the hip turned, right? I mean, it's just, I think it's one of those situations. If you're deciding if someone made a touchdown in football, even us normal fans, we don't have to be refs. We can look at the line, right, Greg? We can literally look at the line and see if their body contacted. But this is one of those things that you might put four judges in a room, Kendra. They watch the same run and call it differently. If there's that much gray space here, then why? I just think the rule should go away. If a guy can rope a steer over his head, or over there his horse's head while he's running straight, fish the legs on and still spin, right? And face off. Then cowboy up, take the time, let him win. I don't understand it.
It would take away that very difficult judgment call that I don't know if that's going to be resolved until we have people who've themselves been there and done it at the very highest level in every event. I don't know how else to reconcile, you know, that responsibility in real time as fast as that happens. I don't have a good answer for that.
Yeah, and I don't even know with replay, right? Again, the definition of when the steer is turned, even if you're watching it in super slow motion, right? At what point, besides measuring their hind feet and the perpendicular of the buck and shoots, and both hind feet now are perpendicular with the buck and shoot? I think it's silly. Anyway, keep going. Next thing, cowgirl.
So the saddle bronc riding, you know, Zeke Thurston strikes again and won the average. Won the world. What do you even say? I'm looking at he won a fortune. I'm going to tell you how much.
456,000 was
but
the number.
But he won 234,000, almost 235,000 at the finals for 456 on the year. But the bronc riding, it was really great. I was trying to look at who. So Brody Kress was second in the average. Lefty Holman was third. And by the way,
good for Lefty.
Lefty with his white boots. I didn't realize till today that the white boots, that was for Larry Mahan, who apparently wore some white boots back in the 60s. I don't remember that. But just as Lefty's bosom buddies with Rocker, and Rocker wears Mahan and ties spurs, and now Lefty's saying he wore the white boots because Mahan did it first. So anyway, those guys they might listen to different music than us, and they might, you know, wear things that whatever, I don't care. But they do, old school cool does mean something to them. And I thought it was cool. Again, the scene downstairs after they give the gold buckles out, when the families come down to the press room, cool that, you know, the family, like, I see Zeke's mother, Linda, well, it's now Thurston, but it was Shuckburg, and Bo Cooper, that, you know, that was at his first NFR in the tie down, he was down there, he's Zeke's cousin, and, you know, I don't know, there's so much. I think we already told the story about how Tanner Milan sent his horse of the year out there when he had surgery in August, sent him out there with Dalton Massey and who else, Ryan Shuckburg. And now I'm forgetting the third traveling partner, but Ryan Shuckburg being another cousin to Zeke and Bo. So a lot of family ties, but they, you know, Canada was waving their maple leaves all week. And yeah, there's always extra special things. I swear that happen on Thursday night, on Canada night, there's always something, you know. And if it's not, it's a buck and horse. If it's not a cowboy, there's always something special that's related to Canada. And my old friend Dwayne Erickson, do you remember him? The mm-hmm. media icon, absolutely yeah. Hilarious. And when the press room used to be where the contestant lounge is now, you know, there were huge no smoking signs in there. And I always say, if I ever get lung cancer, it won't be because I smoked. It will be because Dwayne Erickson, I would sit next to him because he was so hilarious. And he would yell at that monitor, chain smoking, drinking beer, because there used to be a Coors keg in the press room also. And screaming at that
stories,
TV. He would scream at that TV monitor, take the re-ride, you effing P-word. And just he was worth the price of admission if I had to be stuck in that press room. So I really miss him. Anyway, shall we talk tie down roping?
Well, I just want to say on Zeke, of all the disciplines, all the events, Zeke obviously outperformed, I think, everybody all the way through. Like, he was, you know what I'm saying? There, you can't, good luck finding any kind of controversy on Zeke getting the gold. Without exception, he was nails and good. Just, he's a good human, another great, great young man. And, you know, this one was pretty cut and dry, right? He rode great the entire time, no matter what horse he had. So hats off to Zeke. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Yes. I can't even imagine anyone questioning anything about that Zeke. And he's as nice as he is, you know, incredibly talented. So there's that. So in the tight end roping, it was nice to see after some calves getting up, it was nice to see, Shad Mayfield put on a little 6.7 second show in round 10. That was cool. You know, there was the one night when his calf got up when he put two wraps. I know the legs weren't stacked crossed right, but anyway, it was nice to see that for him. Riley Webb, $453,000 a year. He's 20 years old. He roped very maturely at the finals. That was cool. And what can you even say about Haven Medjid? And if you want to talk about power couples for this NFR, Shelby, she said she's switching from Boisjoli to Medjid officially on January 1st. No more Boisjoli, no more hyphenating, no more nothing. She's going straight Medjid. But I remember in 2021, when Oat and I were headed to Texas from Vegas, and we stopped because I'm an iced tea freak, to get an iced tea at McDonald's, not that, you know, within an hour or two out of town. And Shelby and Haven had just both finished the reserve world champions, and there they were eating at McDonald's. And I'm like, are you guys kidding me? Like, you just both won second in the world. And they're like, yeah, first losers. That's why we're at McDonald's, you know? And so I saw Shelby. We were actually on Coleman Proctor and Luke Brinkpino's show out in front of the Thomas and Mack on the right there at the end. And I'm like, please tell me that when you leave town this year with your gold buckle and whatever Haven leaves with, which ended up being an NFR tie down roping record and a pile of money, you're not going to eat at McDonald's this time. And she goes, well, I think maybe we can do a little bit better. But I think, you know, like the night for me when Haven's winning the average, which again, new fast time record on 10, and he sets a new NFR record and he's 6'4", that was memorable. And also that he did it on a horse that his wife, Lil Punch, is actually trained by his wife. And when we were at the breakaway finals, I was asking, because I think her brand has been like a heart with a B in it. And now I think they're shuffling to like a heart with an M in it for Medjid. But those two are some go-getters outside of the arena. And I don't know if you don't want to try to keep up with couples like the Medjids or the Tanazis, because they're up before the sun out at the barn. And who knows how many horses but they're not just training them and riding them. They're raising them. They're having their own breeding programs. Like, it's incredible. And talk about a work ethic, not just for their roping, but, or like Brittany for her, you know, running barrels, or Garrett, her husband, for team roping. But they're cracking the code on major, like, you know how the breeding programs with the rough stock has just come to a whole new level, and the depth of it is so deep. Some of these really talented, you know, high-end top 15 types, the stuff they've got going at home it's impressive.
Well, that's because of the Riata buckle, and like, there's new stuff in the business that makes it a revenue source to pay attention to that game besides just the gold buckle. Now, before we get away from that and stray too much, Riley Webb, you know, this is one of the things that when I watch tie down roping that I particularly look at. So, you know, they nod, get a good out. I look at the outs when I'm watching. These are just after seeing, you know, 35 years of this. But when they throw their loop and it's going over the calf, and when they, when they're lifting their leg and they've got their right foot in the, and there's like a pause. If you watch it, Hanchy, and I noticed it from Riley, there, it's like it moves slow motion there for a bit while they're analyzing which way the calf's going to turn, how the slack's been adjusted, what their horse is doing. And if you watch that, like it's like they slow down, like that's when they're coming off, right? It's, and then back into it. And you'll see the younger guys, like it's hurry, 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 right? It's rope, jump off, you know, every, you know, just fly through this.
Like they're
especially Hanchy, right? They stand in that stirrup and there's
at the same time they're handling their slack. It's an art form.
Handling their slack and looking at the calf. And it's like, it's, if you start watching it, it's noticeable on those really, and Riley was doing that. Riley was staying, was standing up in there, calculating the program, which is just a further example, like you said, of his maturity at a young age, right? But he's also experienced, I mean, he roped for $1 million at Days of 47 and didn't get it, right? I mean, he's experienced big stuff. Huge, yeah.
High pressure, high money stages, and that's part of, you know, what's going on here. Like, Bridger Anderson, how many rounds? He won two rounds and did well in some others. But, I mean, you know, he came up through those junior programs. The junior programs, you know, and over at the convention center, the Junior World Finals, like, that is, you know, and they're doing it with the rough stock, too. I mean, but these kids, you know, they're not going to crack. That's just where we see the success with these rookies at the NFR, because they've already been there. This is not going to get to them. Like, they're ready, and they're more ready. There's more preparation than we've ever had in the history of our sport.
Well, and I would challenge all the rodeo committees that are listening. Like at the Utah Days of 47 Rodeo, we do $100,000 youth rodeo, and we bring those young competitors behind the chutes and behind, right, so that they feel the lights, the camera, and the action. All of us in rodeo need to continue to provide opportunities like the Yeti Junior World Finals. Congratulations to Bo, Brylin, all them. What a great event. I think the new facility, the new floor they were on was even better for all the competitors. And we, you know, hats off. We need to keep giving kids opportunities, because rodeo's not Little League, right? They're, you know, it takes effort and a lot of time and money to provide these opportunities for little kids to get on small bucking horses that fit them, bulls that fit them. Again, putting a 11-year-old kid on a bull that's a 16-point bull isn't going to do anything but rob his heart, right? Put him on the right kind of animals. And all of that stuff, Cody Custer preaches that. All of that stuff is progressing, and I'd love to keep seeing it so we get more Riley Webbs at the NFR in Las Vegas.
And it's the short game in a way, in that they are kids, but it's all for the benefit of the long game. And same, you know, JJ Miller, who in the past has oftentimes brought cattle to the NFR, he didn't have a pen at the NFR this year, but he hauled an amazing set of steers all the way from Texas to Vegas for those, you know, 18 and under junior steer wrestlers at its event. But it's like, to have a safe environment to put them on these big stages, it really shows up when they're 20 years old, like Riley Webb. I mean, that's super cool.
Yes, it does. Keep it going.
Okay, so in the barrel racing, Brittany Posey Tanazi won just on the brink of 500 grand this year. That's cool. Like, almost $497,000. That is, you know, she won second in the average. I thought it was, you know, it was shocking to see Brittany hit a barrel in the last round. Who else? Somebody else that was doing really well hit a barrel in the last round.
Someone else hit a barrel. Who was it?
Jordan Briggs hit a barrel.
Jordan Briggs.
Yeah. And anyway, it happens. But who was not happy for Lisa Lockhart? She won the average, reserve world champ. Know. But, you know, it's just a very... you know, we already talked about it while we were still out there, but that Lisa Lockhart, who has yet to win a gold buckle, is the all-time career earnings leader of anyone ever. Good for her. And there's no one more gracious. And she's just on the ranch in the rodeo arena, cowgirl, but just an awesome human. And she's always happy for everybody else. I think a lot of people would be delighted, you know? But
yeah,
super cool. And you know, looking back, you know, we've talked about a lot of it, but you know, Tacy Matthews ended up 15th, didn't get to bring Pop Rocks. That was sad, but pretty fun, pretty cool to see some of these fraternity trainers, you know, the Cassie Marys of the world and stuff, absolutely shine on 5-year-olds on the biggest stage in rodeo. Cowgirls, yeah. Man.
Well, and you know, Brittany can be a little spicy, right? And that doesn't bother me. Brittany at events, you know, she, again, it goes back to that passion to win. And Brittany can be spicy is a good word for that, right? She has her expectations from the start to the finish, all the way through the rodeo season. And that shows up. And again, I'll say I have a special place for, I think it's really cool, these women that are training their own animals, riding their own animals, right? Or, you know, because there's so many powerhouse horses out there because of, like you said, the breeding programs, and it's cool. But still, all these 13s, the level of competition this year in barrel racing was stunning. Stunning women, stunning horses. It was bad. It was bad to the bone. It was cool.
Yeah, and huge, you know, commendation to the ground crew. I felt like, you know, there were a couple slips here and there, but generally speaking, there was a slip to finish.
There was a slip in the 10th round, and it kind of caught my attention. But I think, again, that because you usually know by the next couple horses, right, if there's actually a break in that ground, and there wasn't, I think that horse got his back end got past himself and he didn't get his toes in enough, and that can happen. But yeah, those guys did a phenomenal job. And you know what was interesting is that, and talking to the rough stock riders, they were, so that's, it's really hard to make it soft enough for the cowboys, heavy enough that the animals get their footing in all these conditions, right? I mean, you look at, you've got bulldoggers, what they need for their feet so that they don't blow their knees out. You've got guys riding big, large farm animals that are getting slammed on the ground that don't want their shoulders. So the amount of stuff that goes into the stupid dirt is, and it's been taken for granted for years and years and years. It's kind of like, well, we're running on clay today. I'm going to bounce like a ball when I fall off, and we better slow down on the first barrel because we're going to skate all the way into the fence. That's just not the case anymore. Hats off to the NFR crew, not only the grounds crew, but Alan and all of them that bring them and give them the time, because that's the other thing. I have to script when I do my deals. I script about 3 or 4 hours a day for my grounds crew. Right? People take this for granted, right? And some of them be, well, we want to get in the arena and ride. No. No, they have to get in there and spend time getting it right. You're going to have to warm up in the practice pen. So hats off to everybody on the ground and the level of competition at the barrel race. It was cool.
Before we get to the bull riding, you can tell me, no, you're not going to take this curveball. But there was kind of an interesting conversation when we had that Wednesday morning makeup round that was round 6, and there was some chatter that really kind of kept going with some people in the contestant herd about, you know, I don't know if everybody realizes the contestants they have the ability, they're offered to buy at, you know, face value, sit up to 6 tickets for every performance. And so there was, and we don't really have to go that much into this, but what the hell, since we kind of talk about everything. So if you had a ticket to round 1, if you had season tickets, Las Vegas events refunded your money. If you bought a ticket, StubHub refunded your money. The contestants' money was not refunded, and I did hear, you know, quite a lot of grumbling about that. On the flip side of that, though, they were given 10 passes for people to come. So to me, that seemed But then even some world champion type people were like, but if everybody else got their money back, why didn't we? So I don't know how you feel about that. And we can just keep moving. But there, you know, those are the two basic sides to that. I was kind of surprised. But I did. It didn't stop. They didn't stop talking about it, the ones that were talking about it.
Well, I think if you're going to refund their money so that everybody didn't bitch, because, you know, if you don't, you know, everybody's looking. Isn't it funny how everybody's looking for something to complain about? So if you were going to refund their money, refund their money. But then, in theory, you'd have to charge them, right, for that Wednesday morning. So come on, get over it. I don't even think we should waste our breath on whoever was saying that. Come on. I mean, now I get it. Well, they're pocketing that money, but still, you got to bring 10 people to that Wednesday morning, which, by the way, I think the people that got to go to the Wednesday morning may have enjoyed that as much as any round.
It was so special. I thought it was absolutely great. And, you know, having students and first responders there, I thought it was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed that morning. Yeah. So cool. let's talk about the bull riding then. Kai Hamilton wins the average on six. And, you know, by the way, second was Sage on five. There was so much interesting. So Kai Hamilton is our first ever world champion from Australia in the bull riding. Do we have any in any other events? I can't think of any in the
PRC, so, not the PBR.
Okay. I realized, because that leads me to one of my favorite, coolest moments is downstairs after round 10. Who's down there? Troy Dunn. That was the coolest thing. I hadn't seen Troy Dunn in so long. And Troy Dunn, you know, the only Australian PBR world champion. He won the PBR finals twice when I was editor-in-chief the first 16 years, I think 95 and 97. I was right there when Troy's winning the world. That was back when we had the finals at the MGM Grand, wasn't it? Anyway, MGM, yep. Right there, and I think it was the first round, and he comes out and gets, when he hits the ground, he dislocates his freaking hip. And do you remember that? It was gruesome.
Yeah.
And Troy Dunn is a tough sucker.
Oh, I can't stress this enough. I have never, and I have met, I was thinking about this in the truck when I was thinking if we talked about Troy, because I saw a picture of Troy and Kai together and it started bringing back memories. I can't tell you people, I know a lot of really tough people. There's a lot of tough people in this sport. But talk about like just this Australian grit, like this, and when I mean tough, I don't mean I can endure pain. I think I would put Troy Dunn today in an MMA ring. I mean this, I would put him in an MMA ring with no training, with some of these little thug monkeys in there, and say, go ahead. And Troy would just look at him. They'd come around, do their swishes, and he would just kill them. He's just so tough. And doesn't Ty seem like, you know, he packs that Australian way with him, right? There's just something about that, these Australians. And I mean it, I think their accent's cool anyway. Like it's like, I don't want to sound gay, but it's just cool. Right. But they're so, Troy Dunn is he's my legend hero. Like he was so cool at all moments.
He was cool at all moments. And was it Troy that used to walk around when he wasn't riding and had no front teeth?
I think Troy would pop those out, because I think we were talking about, I think he has a partial, because when they're out, but you know,
Troy,
he probably lost those.
He was the nicest. He was so nice. Remember he had a wild card brother. Was it Owen Dunn?
Owen.
And then, but Troy, there was a little bit of JV Mooney. Troy used to smoke, remember?
Yeah, but Troy, I don't think it's fair. JB's a little,
more. It's totally different. Troy was always,
Troy's just so low maintenance. Like, if Troy never needed anything, like, I don't mean anything, and they would all be talking about their draw, and if this bull, you don't hear an Australian, well, you darn sure didn't hear Troy Dunn bitch about anything. The bull he drew, the ground, I don't care what it was. You, mom was the word out of him. He just went out, and even when he lost, he just didn't complain because he was above that.
You couldn't beat an excuse into Troy Dunn. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, he's Kai is just that way. So you
Kai,
can tell.
Okay, and so Kai ended up winning the Top Gun, which he got a rifle and a $20,000 voucher toward a Ram truck, which if he decides to use it.
Is that false advertising? Because I swear, correct me if I'm wrong, have I not read, I thought I read, maybe I'm wrong, that they got a new truck.
In the beginning, it was like that. I kind of stopped saying much about it because the $20,000 voucher, how much does a new truck cost now? I mean, God bless America,
That'll buy four wheels and the tailgate.
I'll say this. In 1985, when the finals moved to Vegas, every world champion left town with a brand new Dodge truck to drive, because Oat drove
all year long.
To drive for 1 year, mm-hmm. free of charge. And Oat left, and I know that like his parents chain smoked all the way back home, and he was just dying because his parents were chain smoking in this brand new truck. We never did. We got out of town in Vegas without ever getting any more details on the NFR contract extension through 2035. We never did get any details on money or anything else. I didn't.
So I'm gonna go out on a limb here. And I'm just going to go from history and tell you the way what I think's going down here. They probably a month out, Kendra, didn't have the deal done. I'm sure they're negotiating lots of issues between LVE and PRCA. And I'm sure there was a sense of, we have to make an announcement at the finals, right?
Right.
What will it look like if we don't say, so there's some pressure. So if I had to guess, they had quote unquote worked out all the problems, right, that they had at the moment and said they had a deal. But I don't know that deal's inked. And I think that we may find out, because here's the other thing. Dallas, now this is hearsay. I haven't read this, but I have from pretty credible sources. Dallas put a lot more money on the table than Vegas had. Now, let me qualify that real quick in Vegas's defense. Vegas brings a lot to the NFR besides just the cash. And I'm talking about the Yeti World Finals. I'm talking about all the stuff that Bo does. Like, they do everything for the PRCA, right? Super Bowl. The PRCA just really has to manage their cowboys and their sponsors. Vegas makes this into the giant event that it is. Now, I'm not saying that if they went to Dallas, that Dallas couldn't do that. Now, they probably could. Would they? I don't know.
Isn't one of Vegas's slogans open 24 hours? I mean, that's part of it. People come all the way to town for the NFR with no intention of buying a ticket because there's watch parties, there's shopping everywhere, there's concerts, it's this destination, and really, that's a huge, 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 huge factor here, right?
Well, and the other line that I think works for a lot of committees is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You know, I mean, that's another tagline. But putting aside the glitz and glamour and the fact that there's so much to do, if you just talk about the NFR, all of the stuff from the trade shows and everything, the effort that Las Vegas Events puts into making that the Super Bowl – oh, stop it – making that the biggest event ever – goes a long ways. So it's not just about money, but Dallas did offer the way I understand it, more cash in payouts to move the NFR to Dallas. But my point, going right back to what you said, I think the reason you haven't heard anything is because if I had to guess and bet my – what would I bet on this? I would bet my left ear, not my right ear, my left ear, that thing's not inked, Kendra. It's not signed. And we may or may not, this might not be over. But well, I'm going, I mean, it may yeah, be.
There certainly weren't a lot of details. And I'm still getting text messages from breakaway ruppers and breakaway ruppers' husbands and whatever saying, well, is there any mention, in which I don't know of any mention, but what I'll say, there was also a little division, I think, amongst the ranks in the breakaway ropers on the handling of that. There was one camp that wanted to fill the Thomas and Mack with add breakaway signs. And there was another camp that stepped back and with realizing that Michael Mack is a kingpin on the NFRC. And he's also their host for the best offer they have at this time. And so the one camp is wanting
Michael
to
Gaughan.
Michael Gaughan. Did I say something else?
Yeah. You said Michael Mack. That's okay.
Oh, Michael Mack, because I'm in the media, NFR media boat with Michael Mack all the last 10 days. Apologies. No. Michael Gaughan. My bad. Sorry. How could I do that? I'm so tired. So Michael Gaughan being the host of the best offer they have at this time, also being, you know, a huge force on the National Finals Rodeo Committee, on the, you know, half, this half is saying fill the Thomas and Mack with signs at breakaway, and this other half is saying we better be careful about burning a bridge with a person who's got a foot in both arenas, right? And point well, taken.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting back note on that, that there was some concern that when she accepted the buckle and was interviewed, there was some concern about what might be said there, right? You know, at the very end of the buckles.
But I knew she wouldn't. I knew she wouldn't because I had talked to her about it the day before. She was smarter than that.
And she went, yeah, she was smarter than that, and she went in the get more with honey than vinegar approach, which I endorse. And I don't think, you know, we had to kick out signs of the fan zone because they weren't allowed. And I think that's the wrong approach. Put all of your energy. I don't think there's anything written in that contract for breakaway. Now I don't have any proof of that, but I don't think that there's anything in that contract for breakaway, but you can definitely prove me wrong, but this is just what I've heard. However, put your energy in. Greg, you might want to comment on this. He loves those 2 days of breakaway. Now, you're talking about a guy that goes and does timing and scoring and produces the broadcast portion of 65 events a year. Greg, you can comment on this. He loves those 2 days in South Point. So why don't they put in energy about making the biggest secondary event in Vegas, just like the World Series did? Next thing you know, if they work hard enough, maybe they're roping for 400,000 like they did at the World Series.
For sure. I mean, that is it's a great event to attend. And even the past 2 years, it was good last year as well. I think the girls are growing up. They're becoming more mature, that they're getting their own place. Why they would want to move in and share it with, you know, the other people. I mean, I know it's a status or whatnot, but they have their own stage right now to show off. They should embrace that.
Well, I applauded their voices. I applauded Shelby's grace, and I also applauded her. Her focus is on the money, and good for her. Like growing the money, that is her. That is the tact she took, and I thought, you know what, good for her, because I feel like I heard the stat that 480 PRC rodeos now have breakaway roping, which is cool. And was it San Angelo that just added it? I mean, whatever. But she took, and rather than kicking dirt and, you know, what do they say? Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Anyway, but she focused on the money. And I think that that was a smart play on her part.
And it's the WPRA, and I'm not saying anything right now negative about the WPRA, but they're collecting the collecting the commission on a lot of rodeos prize money for breakaway. So it seems to me that the WPRA should be taking an initiative to work really, really hard to grow this. And I think the money should be equal to at least, right, equal to how much presence, like I said earlier on a podcast, if they're at that many rodeos and that's 70% of the rodeos, then they're due to be making 70% of what the other disciplines events are making.
Well, and another needs to get there. That's a cool point to bring up. And another thing that Shelby brought up when we were doing the Purina pre-show with Coleman and Luke was that there are rules, like the guys that are at the NFR, they can't go across town and compete at the South Point in the open roping. Like there's rules. You can't, if you're competing at the NFR at the Thomas Mack, you can't do some of those other things. And point made on that is that Shelby said at this time, we can make more money at the other events that go on around town, the jackpots, than we can at our final. So if there's pros and cons to consider here, I'm assuming if they went to the Thomas and Mack, then they can no longer compete at these others. So it's a lot of a conversation, and it's definitely not cut and dried. We have to talk about Stetson Wright a moment. You know, so he only got to get on 3 of 20 head, finished off his hamstring. He will be having surgery in Utah tomorrow, Wednesday. Today's the 19th, so Wednesday the 20th, he's having surgery to fix that hamstring. He was so much fun to watch in the back of the chutes when his brother Ryder and when Kai Hamilton rode in the bull riding. And I thought he really endeared me because he, you know, for one thing, he really was generous with his time. You know, I'm sure he's not feeling like $1 million, but he was generous with his time, with the media, and with, he really, you know, that he said in the early going, he really didn't, until he had to, he really didn't want to say anything about his injury because he didn't want to take away, if he wasn't able to complete the course, he didn't want to take away from those who did go on and win. I thought that was pretty cool of him. And I thought he was quite gracious. And he also, you know, he won almost $500,000 this year. I feel like Stetson Wright has a great chance very soon to be our first $1 million a year cowboy. And I thought there was a lot of really good human qualities that came out of him in the last couple of weeks. And I sure wish him well. He's in his recovery from his surgery. He said that he's not, you know, really saying kind of an ETA as far as his return. He just said, I'll be back when I'm 100%. And, you know, like he said, I've been through every emotion here that this NFR, I've cried like a little girl, and, you know, I've said, why me? But then his parents said, let's twist that around and turn it into try me, you know? And so he's ready to go ahead, take his licks, get the surgery done and work on getting back. And so of course we wish him all the best. Also a matter of housekeeping this week, Mike Mathis, the rodeo announcer who we lost during the finals unexpectedly, his First Baptist Church in Lufkin, Texas, this week, Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. is the visitation, and Mike's funeral is Friday at 11 a.m., Friday, December 22nd at the First Baptist Church in Lufkin, Texas, and sure thinking about his wife, and all of us are just still sort of like, did that really happen? You know, that was not a fun piece of this year's NFR. Have we mentioned the fact that it became public that Jeff Metters resigned from the Cowboy Channel and is effective as of December 31st? I don't know that we've talked about that.
We haven't mentioned it. And so we'll see. You know, what's interesting about that is in the last couple of years, there's been multiple attempts for other entities to purchase the Cowboy Channel, and I believe it, what I don't know, I think it's just the Cowboy Channel, not RFD, from the Gotch family, from Patrick Gotch, and they've been unsuccessful. I heard that as of a few months ago, there was another big offer and negotiations on the Cowboy Channel once again. And I assumed that it was probably Teton Ridge. Teton Ridge was after it a little earlier. I assumed that they were back after it. But then I found out midway through that it was, that it's actually Taylor Sheridan and their company that's after it. And, you know, I'm not an expert, but we're talking about purchasing this, and I'm not going to give numbers because I don't think I should. I know some of the numbers, but we're talking about buying this for like a 50 times the EBITDA, right? Like buying this for way, 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 way more than, you know, enterprise bankers would value it as. And now the other interesting thing is I heard that family members in the Gotch family, and again, this is all rumor mill, so it could just be water cooler talk, but, you know, other family members other than Patrick, they want him to sell it. This is a good deal. Sell it, Dad. Let's, you know, this is a really, really great thing. And then I think Patrick is the one that really loves rodeo and loves even more what, how the Cowboy Channel has evolved. And listen, I'm going to say this right now. Originally, I did not think that this deal would work. I did not think this deal would work. What I didn't, that Patrick, the visionary, he was a visionary in that more rodeo, especially to the core rodeo group, would be a good thing. And that's what they've got. You know, every cowboy has Cowboy Plus app. They use it. Stock contractors use it. I mean, it's not only just fans watching it, but the industry. He's monetized on the industry's need to be able to see everybody at once and what's going on. And so, you know, I hope it does get purchased, Kendra. And, you know, because for me, what I want to see more on rodeo is more storytelling. The stuff that we do, the stuff that you do. And that is the way you become a unbelievable fan is when you, like I met Troy Aikman, right? He's a massive man that's just cool, right? Doing really cool stuff. So I've been a Troy Aikman fan, right? If I'm going to listen to a broadcast on football, I'm listening to Troy Aikman because I met him and I feel like I know him. Well, we've got to do this for all of our fans. We've got to let them feel that kindred spirit that you feel, Kendra, that by, and you do that by telling stories. ESPN 360. You know what? If you want to, you want to watch one of those, Kendra, pretty soon, all of a sudden, you are in love with some rugby player you've never heard of. And that's a whole nother point of view. Let's save that. We're running long.
Remember when they did that?
We'll see what happens.
Remember when they did that with Michael Jordan? Was it Michael Jordan? Right? And,
yeah.
And it was. Yeah. It was so cool. And you didn't have to like basketball.
We've got those same stories.
Yeah.
We've got those same things going on. But that's a whole point of view. We'll get that first quarter. I think we should talk about that. But you know what? I think Jeff's done a fantastic job. I bet he's not done in the rodeo business. Jeff and I were kind of – I think I was a jerk to Jeff for a long time, honestly. Typical Tommy Joe, for no real reason, right? No real reason other than when we're kind of in the same spaces and broadcast. But Jeff and I, he really is a great guy who really understands the sport really, really, really well. And I hope big things happen for Jeff. I'm glad that he did what he thought was best for him. And I hope big things happen for him. And I hope the Cowboy Channel finds a replacement for him that's good. So.
Unless the sale happens and Jeff's part of whoever buys it's plan. That's my understanding, and, I guess.
And that may be absolutely the case. And, you know, but I think it's not just Jeff. There's people all up and down the Cowboy Channel ranks But everybody does that. You know, if everything doesn't go exactly your way, you're going to leave. You're going to leave. You're going to leave. Yada, yada, yada. But if it doesn't, you know, go every, you know, and trust me, I think Patrick's probably a handful. Like, there's no doubt about that. If you talk to some people, he's an interesting character and a handful. And so, you know, I just can, let's keep growing. Let's whatever happens, let's keep improving our sport. We had a great NFR. We really did. It was a great NFR. The weather there, oh my God, was the weather not wonderful this year? It was great. There was some sickness, but I don't think that the NFR bug grew as big as it has in the past. So those are things that we all watch out. You know, we were all on vitamin C and lemon juice, warm lemon juice every morning. And I was doing all the different nose irrigation stuff and got through it. And I'm back home ready to have Christmas.
Absolutely. I don't know if there are other things you want to say. There's one last thing I'd love to say before we sign off or whatever, that I think is absolutely huge, that of course, you know, Casey Phil retires at the top of his game, you know, okay, with some frustration with 3 to 5 years left in the tank physically, but, you know, he's going to do other things and he will kill it in business beyond here. But huge absences moving forward. Casey Phil is huge. That's a huge change. That's a huge, I don't know if loss is the right word, because, oh my God, he had a glorious run. But Jade Corkill no longer going to be in the mix. That's a very huge change in team roping. He's on everybody's Mount Rushmore. Can I keep going though? There's two more I want to mention because Caleb Schmidt and Pockets. I mean, it's been extraordinary. Well, I didn't hear
a definitive on that.
I again didn't watch it on TV, but I'm told he had a really cool conversation before the 10th round with Trevor Brazil. And you know, you can see it coming. Like, Caleb's got three little kids. He has said for a couple, 3 years now or so, when Pockets is done, I'm done. Now, I don't think either one of them's done if they want to keep going, but he's now saying, you know, like, I don't know how much we're going to see of Caleb Schmidt. At least he's talking more openly about that. And a huge last mention is, if my understanding is correct, Sage Kimsey is going to the PBR. That's a huge thing here. I mean, and so his it's like when Ty Murray's a little kid and he's writing in his school papers when he's a little kid that, like, his goal in life was to beat Larry Mahan's record, and Sage Kimsey was that little kid, you know, gunning for Donnie Gay's 8 gold buckles, and Sage has 7, and if he rides away to go to the PBR, I mean, that is a huge turn, of course, that we have to mention, because – man, and I know that there was the night when we all assumed he was going to get a rewrite. I don't know why he didn't get a rewrite. I know that was a frustration point for him. But anyway, for him, if he's truly leaving the PRCA, that's big.
It is big. And really, his brother, Trey, should have got a rewrite in the 10th round. You can't even explain that, but we won't talk about, I mean, that is what it is. Here's the thing. Hats off to Sage. Here's the thing about the PBR. You have a little more control of your life. And he wants to, I mean, I walked away from the PBR, right? I had it set. And I walked away because I wanted to spend more time raising my boys. That's why I left. I wanted to be at baseball games. And I think hats off to Sage and anybody that chooses their family over their career. More parents maybe ought to do that, and we'd have less kids screwed up. So I'm very happy. It just shows his character and his raising. And he has a little more structure in the PBR, and that's good. And the only other thing I would say about everybody else is it's nice to know that these people – can retire now a little younger, like Casey, because if you take this back 20 years, it was either keep riding, shoe horses, or sell cars. So our sport is advancing, granted slowly, but it is advancing, and people are making careers at a younger age out of rodeo before they have concussions to where they, every time they sneeze, they go out. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that they're able to retire, spend time with their family, and financially do it and not have to sell pickups or nail shoes on horses.
Although I'll say this, it's my complete and total understanding that Casey Field is already making exponentially more money than he ever made riding bucking horses. He's going to kill it in his next chapter. And, you know, as well, you know, Caleb Schmidt. And I'm glad that you said the word concussion, because I did want to mention that Ty Pozzebon's mother, Leanne, she did step forward and make a comment. You know, for those of you who don't know, Ty was a young, I think 23 years old, PBR bull rider who suffered a number of concussions and then suffered in silence with depression and ended his own life. And so she on the, you know, two sides to every story, if not five, she did step forward with concern, you know, for Kai after he got that concussion, because, you know, she knows, you know, the ultimate price that can be paid in, you know, with concussions. I mean, it's a really tough call. So, you know, enough about that, but it, you know, my heart goes out to her. Her son's not here because he was the ultimate, you know, worst end of this story there. So.
And I know this is getting long, but I'm going to finish my portion. And I promise I won't talk anymore with kind of, I'm going to pretend to be Dr. Phil. For everybody that walked away from the NFR that did not accomplish what they personally wanted to accomplish, what their dad wanted them to accomplish, what their wife wanted them to accomplish, what they think they should have accomplished, don't let that lead you to a dark place. Okay. It doesn't have to. Depression's a real thing. I mean, my dad dealt with depression, more specifically kind of on the later years when everything that he expected that he was might not have been what it was at the time, right? It wasn't as young, and people weren't calling him as much. And I'm just saying, depression's real. Please watch your family members, pay attention to it. There's several things that I thought was interesting when I did a little research. After the NFR, if you have a significant other, lots of different warning signs for depression. It could be that guy that gets in the gym and never leaves. If they start obsessing about things, right? Coping mechanisms, they call it, which is could be alcohol, could be drugs, it could be overtraining, right? Or it could be being a recluse. Just, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if you didn't get, you know, producer of the year, or you didn't get that rodeo that you wanted, if you were a clown, or if you're a cowboy and you didn't win the gold buckle, there's next year. And by the way, in perspective, there's life. Look around. There's people that love you. We don't have anything to complain about. You and I said it before we went on air. We've got nothing to complain about. So keep perspective, everybody. Life is good. You're breathing. Someone loves you. I'm so very thankful, Kendra, for you and Greg. I mean, Greg is one of the greatest things that ever walked into my life. So, and our relationship, Kendra, for all these years, I'm grateful for all my friends. I want everybody to have a fantastic Christmas. If you didn't win in Vegas, whatever reason, whatever, if you didn't accomplish what you think you should have, it's okay.
To remember that most people who compete in rodeo will never make the NFR.
Well, the biggest percentage of them. But even to make it and then not, you know, it's all these personal goals that we set up. And again, this could be a whole nother point of view. And I know we're running long. Final thoughts, Greg Teagarden. Christmas thoughts, final thoughts while we wrap up this really long version of Most Men.
I want to say this NFR was probably one of my favorite ones I've been to so far. And I think it has to do with the fact that we did this show every morning for 10 days straight, minus the one day. But, you know, it was great seeing you guys come in every morning. And I learned so much about the NFR and so much more about rodeo. And it just kind of made me a little bit more passionate about it. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you. I thought it was kind of hilarious because we did exactly in round numbers zero preparation. It was like coming in hot, multiple cups. We got coffee, we got airborne, we got whatever, and walnuts and blueberries sitting there. But we didn't. We just kind of shot from the hip, which was cool. But I will close by saying, for many, many years, I've worn every single day this attitude of gratitude bracelet, and it is how I feel in my heart. I am so grateful. I'm still living in the nose of Lane's horse trailer, and I couldn't be more grateful. We're getting rain. It's going to be green, and Taylor's coming home from Texas, bringing his fiance Jordan Tierney. So we all get to sit, even if my house isn't finished, we're going to sit around a table and be together. And I'm so grateful.
I am too. Well, I want to thank all of you for being subscribers. Shoot us some comments on our free text line. Thank you all for listening. We don't know where this is going. We didn't know where this was going when we started it. We agreed to ride this horse for a while and see how it goes, but download, listen, subscribe, tell your neighbor about us if you want to. We're thankful that you're listening to us and sharing your time with us. Hats off to everybody. I'm going to go out on a limb. Now, these two may beat me up, but I'm going to say you're probably not going to hear from us until after the first of the year. But, you know, they may beat me into submission here, but I would like to start the fresh new year. We'll set a time. Greg and I'll be at the National Western with our friend Leon Vick and all that crew for 17 days of 29 performances. And Kendra, you're going to be all over the place. So we'll keep word. We'll let you know when our next episode of No Spin Rodeo is. So from us here to you, happy holidays. Just enjoy it. It's just great. And I love all of you. Actually really love you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you for listening. This has been No Spin Rodeo episode 18.